From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
All right, we are back with another episode of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill. I'm joined by Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, I don't really have like cereal or anything delicious to talk about at the top of the show today. I'm sorry, but how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm excited. I'm taking tomorrow off of work, so I'm excited for a long weekend. Hopefully it's relaxing. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, we're hanging in there. I'm excited. I'm going to go out to a disc golf tournament tomorrow. I'm going to go check out the challenge at Goat Hill for a little bit and see what it's what an A tier is like during a pandemic. So I'm excited to report back on that next week, and we'll do some picks for that show later. But let's go over a little bit of news first. I do want to give people a reminder. We're coming up on PDGA Board of Directors election season. We have 17 candidates. I have interviewed 15 of them so far, and there will be a series of special interview episodes of PDGA Radio dropping sometime next week. So please, if you like me as a human and you know, want to support the show, go listen to all of them, because it took a lot of time to interview 15 people.
And you don't have to like you. You just want to be able to get a really
I mean, they kind of have to like me, because they're going to hear me ask the same question like 17 times.
Yeah.
Fine, they don't have to like me, but they can respect the effort.
Yeah, just do it to be able to find the best couple candidates to be on the board. How about that?
Exactly, exactly. So. Yeah, exactly. So no, that's mostly my human appeal to people. But if you hate me, then definitely don't listen to it, or just fast forward through the questions.
I'm not sure why people are still listening to the show if they hate you.
People got weird things they do in life, Sarah. I don't knock it. It's fine. If you got to do what you got to do to get by. You know, so yeah, 17 candidates, a lot of people to pick from and talk to. I know we mentioned a couple of the candidates last week. I suggest you go over and get educated. You know, we've got a guy like Johannes from over in Ethiopia. We've got a couple young dudes from California, the guy named Stuart Miller, who I had a good talk with. Dave Foss is a current member on the board of directors. Had a good talk with him. So I think there's a good like mix of people and personalities, and I think everybody can find someone or two someones that they would like to vote for starting July 1st. So if you want to read up on all of their candidate statements, Sarah, I know you read all 17 of them, right?
Oh, every word.
You liar. But they do have videos, even most of them. You know, look, it chip away at it, people. It's you got time now. Go through one or two every day. And just, you know, get educated. That's the main thing we want to do with this. And that's why we're doing the special podcast next week and stuff like that. So anyway, board of directors elections coming up. Another piece of news, Sarah, we made a change to kind of the requirements for points and qualifications for Worlds next year. Obviously, everything got pushed back from 2020 to 2021. Just so people understand, because there was a slight bit of confusion. You know, people may have missed the prior announcement or something. Sarah, pop quiz. Where are all of the world championships happening next year? You don't have to tell me the exact locations, but are they...
They're happening where they should have happened this year.
Ding, 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 ding. Thank you. So that was the correct answer. All the world championships got pushed back a year. So if you were thinking, oh man, I'm going to try and qualify for 2021 AM Worlds, that's still going to be in Orlando, Florida. So basically what we did is the points in order to get an invite for next year have been reduced by 30%, basically in response to, you know, all of the couple of months that we didn't have sanctioning. So that's the big deal there. And then the other thing is, if you earned an invite in 2020, or if you were invited to Worlds this year, 2020, your invite will be good for 2021, which I think is super cool, Sarah. What was your, were you happy with some of the resolutions of that as someone who's, you know, played both pro Worlds doesn't really matter because that's just goes by ratings. But like, yeah, as someone who's been in AM Worlds, you know, did you did you like how this went, where we just kind of extended the invitations and everything still?
Yeah, I think so. It also kind of takes out the uncertainty of, well, I live in this state and things aren't really opened up that much, or my sanctioning got approved a little bit later, or I'm not comfortable playing events this year, that kind of thing. And I think it kind of levels the playing field and helps out with that. So yeah, I think it was a great determination to make.
Yeah, that was the big goal, was just to make it as fair to people and, you know, account for this unprecedented year. So hopefully everyone will still be able to come who is able to. There's obviously going to be some stipulations about players who age out of certain divisions. You can go check out the announcement on the PDGA website to get more into that. But those are the big things. And then there's one more small piece of like organizational news. You know, we put out these best practices for people who are participating in and playing tournaments in COVID-19. And there was a significant change made that will be up on the website by the time this show is out. Basically, just after talking with some TDs and everything, and as well as the medical committee, the best practices for water were updated. You know, it's hot, summertime. Before, we were basically saying that players should all just bring their own water, and that events shouldn't have communal water stations. But it looks like now we are encouraging communal water stations, but with some sanitization measures in place. So you can go check that out over on the website. It's basically, I think the thing that is at least like made me feel kind of better through all this, Sarah, is a lot of the research coming out. And I think that's what this is a response to, is that like surface transmission hasn't really been as big of a thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, and it's just practicing regular water hygiene. Like, don't take off. I've actually seen some crazy things at disc golf tournaments. I don't remember where I saw it. I apologize.
People do gross stuff sometimes.
Yeah, but I apologize. There was an event where the TD was actually preventing gross things from happening. Like, people dip, you know, those like towels that people wear around their neck.
Yeah, I like dip them in the bucket. Don't
like,
do that.
Dip them in the bucket, or like grabbing ice from the top. And he actually made this contraption where he had the big like Gatorade, old school Gatorade coolers. And it was like this wooden bar that went out the top of three of them with a lock on it so that you could not get the top off. So just don't do things like that, people.
Don't be nasty.
Don't be nasty.
Yeah. That should just be a fact of life. Yeah. Don't be nasty. Yeah. So go, if you are concerned or have questions about, you know, how water is being handled at tournaments, just know, we know it's hot, we know it's summertime, and I think your TDs will be taking care of you. So those are the big things, the big pieces of news on the PDGA front. Sarah, I know you had a little bit of news that you saw on the professional player front. Why don't you give me the lowdown on what's happening with pro players right now?
Yeah, the one piece of big news that I saw, I think yesterday, earlier this week, was Chris Dickerson signed a 3-year Prodigy contract. I was not at all surprised by that, but the video that Prodigy put together with Chris is actually, it's really cool and kind of educational as far as letting you into Chris Dickerson's life a little bit. He's not the most active on social media. He's a pretty quiet kind of dude, I think, unless you get to know him a little bit better. So I would go out, if you're trying to get to know Chris Dickerson a little bit more and follow him as he totally blows up the tour, like, go out and watch that video. It was pretty entertaining, and big congrats to him for signing that contract. And yeah.
Yeah. I love the video. I think Chris Dickerson's a great player, and you're right. He's not out selling himself on social media all day, but I part of being a sponsored player is the company pumping you up. So like, I'm stoked to see Prodigy giving him that treatment, telling like the little origin story of him and first getting his sponsorship and his relationship with Will Schustrick and stuff. Yeah, I thought that was really cool, and you know, I would like to see more of that on the sponsored player front. Like, but you know, and I'm not saying that you know, manufacturers have done poorly of that. I just know that players have kind of taken the mantle of like pushing themselves as their own brand, which is a positive in that it gives them a little more freedom. Like, if you know, if Simon Lizotte were ever to leave Discmania, and I'm not saying that he's going to, this is just conjecture. If Simon Lizotte ever left Discmania, Simon Lizotte is a brand in and of himself already. He's got his YouTube channel. Everyone knows him. He could go wherever he's at and do just fine. But I think there is some value in companies elevating players who people don't know as much, or maybe just aren't as active on social and just aren't comfortable with that. And Chris Dickerson is the kind of guy that people should be getting to know about because he kills it. And so I'm happy to see his personality given a little bit more of a spotlight. And I think it's kind of funny, like, this gives me a good segue, like UltiWorld Disc Golf put out these surveys this week. They surveyed, I think they put out the survey to like 150 pros, but got like 40 back, 40 replies. And the most underrated MPO player was Chris Dickerson. And I think some of that comes from, he's just low key. He's not super flashy when he plays. He's very, he's an excellent player, but he's not like that. He's just super understated. Like they say the underrated MPO player, he's very understated. Like there's not a lot of flash. He's not, you know, like doing anything over the top crazy. He's just good. He's just really, really good and solid and an excellent player. And so I want to see more people get to know people like Chris Dickerson. He was one of my favorite interviews we did on this show in the last year or so, just because,
yeah,
again, I feel like he is one of those people who people don't get to know as much.
He's a funny dude. And
he is.
I think the other part of it too is he has not been out to some of the West Coast swing events because he hasn't, I don't think to date he has flown yet.
I don't know if he's never flown, but I know he does. He is definitely afraid of flying. I had a talk with him about this.
Yeah.
American Classic.
Yep. So, yeah, maybe it's just that he hasn't been out, you know, to the other side of the country. And like you said, he's just kind of, he lets his playing speak for itself. And I think that's really honorable. And, I would agree that he's totally underrated and understated as well.
It's wild to me that someone with 129 career wins, a 1042 rating, 100. Okay, Chris Dickerson's career earnings, $136,000, which is probably pretty high in the grand scheme of how long he's been playing. Rookie of the Year, two-time Disc Golf Pro Tour champion, is still considered underrated. I almost say this. I say, shame on you, fans. That's on the fans, dude. That is not on anybody else. That's not on Chris Dickerson. That's on the fans. We know that there are super hardcore disc golf fans out there. And I'm sorry if you think I am putting you on the spot, fans. But let's start rating and getting Chris Dickerson higher. Let's make this the season of Chris Dickerson. We should just have a segment on Chris Dickerson every week. Let's do it.
Okay. And can I add in, if we're going to go the Tennessee route, can I add in Heather Young as well? I think we should add in both of them.
Sure.
Okay.
That's great. They're both
every week.
I don't know. We might need to talk to their, we should talk to their sponsor about sponsoring the show, maybe. Anyway, they're both on the same team. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
No, but I'm, you know, it's good to have new people to talk about, but man, we also want people to recognize how good some of these people are. So
yeah,
I'm sorry if you're a fan of the show and I just called you out. Sorry. Anyway, and that whole survey over at UltiWorld was somewhat interesting, somewhat predictable, I thought. You know, they did some stuff on the different tour stops, things like that, you know, and then they leave for subscribers, which, tip of the hat to UltiWorld putting this one behind the paywall, because, you know, this is, as much as it's maybe a little bit on the drama side, this is what will get people to subscribe. They put the player you least like to share a card with and most overrated MPO and FPO players behind their paywall. I will not spoil that. However, I will just say that three responses on the MPO side said that that was a bad question, and four responses on the FPO side literally asked, why would you ask this? So, but at the same time, you know what? I'm putting on my media guy hat. I'm not putting on my, which is hard because I am the media guy for PDGA, but there is, I have long thought that there is a fear or a hesitance in disc golf for players to maybe come off as critical of each other, when you don't see that in a lot of other pro sports. Other sports, they'll call people out.
Yeah. It's just
so do other players, so do other teams. It's called beef, Sarah. Get on board.
Yeah, but okay, but are you thinking about like basketball?
Yeah, man.
Like how many times a year does that team play the other team and they have to see each other face to face?
Several. I don't know the exact number.
Okay. But within the disc golf world, if you're on tour, you're seeing each other, especially on the women's side. We talk about this all the time.
No,
you get like
I know.
The same four people on the lead card every single week. You've got to play with these people. You want to have a good relationship.
I know.
That's why I can't call people out on this podcast, because chances are I'm going to end up on a card with them in the near future. And
we had about a three-week window where you could call people out, and then you're signing up for tournaments again.
I am. I just signed up for the Music City Open, and I'm on the wait list for Idlewild.
Awesome. That's good. I'd rather have you out there playing than being able to talk smack. No, look, I don't want all the disc golfers. What I would actually like to see less than pro disc golfers like calling each other out, I would just like to see more questions. And this is something that I will try and start doing as an interviewer. I would like to see them ask more questions about what they see in other people's play or other people's approach to certain shots, because I do find that interesting. Like if you can say, you know, hey, Paul Macbeth, you know, you did this tee shot on this hole, but you know, Eagle opted for the forehand route. What do you think of that choice and that difference and things like that? And I think there are some questions you can get at where it's not necessarily to bring up the beef, but just to get other players talking about each other, because these players are the most knowledgeable about each other. Like you said, they spend the most time with each other. So I think they have a lot of good insights, and maybe they just don't get to share them enough. I don't know. I'd like to know what they think.
We could give them a platform for that for sure.
We could. We could definitely. All right. Let's do this, Sarah. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we have a cool interview with Ben Smith and Brian Geis. Brian is the guy, he's known as the slow-mo guy from Jomez and Central Coast, but he put together this amazing documentary called Throw Canada. It's about all of the growth that's been going on up in Prince Edward Island and the Canadian National Championships. So we're going to talk to those guys, and then Sarah and I are going to come back, and it will be the triumphant return of picks. Yes.
Woohoo!
All right. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PGA Radio. All right, so hopefully at this point, it's been out for a couple weeks on some Patreon channels, so hopefully you've had a chance to see it. But if you have not, we have the filmmaker and de facto star of the documentary Throw Canada here with us today. First is Brian Geis. You might know him as the slow-mo guy from Jomez and Central Coast, but he is the filmmaker, do we say director? Is it properly director, Brian?
I usually veer away from that term.
All right.
I'll take filmmaker.
He's the guy behind Throw Canada. And then we have Ben Smith. He is the tournament director for the Canadian National Championships, founder of the Maritimes Disc Golf Association. Thank you guys for coming on. I'm excited to talk a little bit of Canadian disc golf with you guys today.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course. So, Brian, I want to throw this one to you first. You know, I've had the chance to talk with you about this project. You know, I remember it's been something on your mind and on your radar for a while now. So how did this project first, you know, come together for you? How did Canadian disc golf get on your radar?
Well, I went up to PEI with Central Coast in 2018 for the Canadian Nationals, and then I returned again in 2019. But yeah, pretty much that initial trip is where I went up there. I saw the place, I met Ben, and it all kind of started from there.
I mean, what was it about there, you know, for obviously it's a pretty far-flung locale, right? Like what can you describe about it for people who haven't been up there? Like what just made you fall in love with it so quickly?
I mean, the setting is incredible, but as much as anything, it's the people and how welcomed we felt, and the hospitality that everyone gave us. It was just kind of unmatched of what I had experienced. And yeah, it really inspired me to want to do more and show more people what's going on up there.
Was that kind of where this came from? You had this experience up there and you thought, man, I can make this into a film. Like what took you from the step of, man, I love it up here to, you know what? I could put this into a 30-minute documentary. Like that's a big leap.
I would say around February of 2019, Ian came to me and he said, hey, I've been talking to Ben and they want to make a documentary. Do you want to be involved? And so I started talking with Ben, and originally it was going to be about Canadian nationals. But pretty early on, I knew that I wanted to make it about Ben. And I kind of played that under the table a little bit at first. You know, I kind of played it along saying that I'm going to make it for Canadian nationals, but really knowing that it was going to be about Ben. And it developed from there.
So Ben, let me kick it to you then. What was your experience like? Because I mean, obviously it sounds like you're probably going into this from a more humble side of things. Like it didn't sound like you're going into this to get a movie made about you, but about disc golf in Canada and what you guys have built up there on Prince Edward Island and in the Maritimes. How did that all evolve for you, and where did your comfort level go with all this?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And probably had Brian revealed his hand earlier on, I would have had a lot more resistance. So kudos to him. Really, I've been very fortunate in my life to travel a lot in the last 20 years, especially. And during that 20 years, disc golf has been a central part of my life. So when I go to new places and find new courses and find new people to play with, you know, it's I love it. I absolutely love it. And for a long time, disc golf was in the Maritimes was really the Wild West. You know, it was the absolute disc golf wilderness. We had one private course and nothing else. But a lot of us Maritimers are so proud and humbled to be from here that we really want to show it off. And so we kind of like had the secret, you know, we had our own ace up our sleeve, like Brian kind of maybe it did, but which was we knew once people got here, they were going to be blown away. And we had the courses and they were really under the radar. They hadn't got enough reviews to really make a splash in the kind of, you know, disc golf world on all the apps that everyone uses and the places you'd find them. But we knew they were good. And we also knew that there's nothing that Maritimers like more than to host a party. So, you know, to get all those people to come up. And I just thought that we really love all the disc golf media companies, but Ian and Central Coast was just so lovely and so wonderful to work with. And Brian and everyone who came up, we just knew that we had hit a good pocket and we had met some real kindred spirits. And so I also think that disc golf has not always done a great job of telling our own story yet. And it's like a one-to-one conversion. You love the game, so you bring your buddy out, you know, but the bigger stories aren't always being told as to like what it took to get these events going and what it took to make all this stuff happen. So I thought that the time was right. And yeah. And I mean, now living through a pandemic, the time's even more right to release it, you know? So.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely seems like a much needed shot of like good vibes and good news to everybody. Just the feel good story of it all is tremendous. You know, how did you go about, like, how long has this all been in the process for you up in the Maritimes? Like, in order to, obviously, this to me is almost, to steal like the catchphrase from like Field of Dreams is like, if you build it, they will come. And you guys have very much done that. You know, how long has that process been? What's been the, besides getting Central Coast up there, you know, what do you think has been the most significant part of that and being able to attract more talent and more people?
Well, that's a great question. I would say, when did it start? Probably about 15 seconds after I threw my first forehand in my first game. I was like, okay, I got to bring this game back to the Maritimes, you know? So that's really the impetus for the whole thing. But like a lot of us, you know, I have some of my real close disc golf friends. We sat around and chew the fat and, hey man, wouldn't it be so cool if you could get someone, you know, a pro to come up here? And that age old question, hey, what do you do to grow the game? Yada, yada, yada. And, but I've worked with some levers of government in the past, and I kind of understood that the game has a better chance of succeeding when there is a proper organized mechanism behind it. Hence the reason of me being a co-founder of the MDGA, the Maritime Disc Golf Association. I knew that in order to lobby some new courses and to get some real money and infrastructures built in, we had to have a face and, you know, something, an entity that was down. And so kind of at the same time that the MDGA was being formed, little did we know, this real miracle for us was Hillcrest was being built. And I say little did we know, because literally the owners of the Hillcrest Farm and Disc Golf Course, Bill and Mary Best, built this course blind. They played with their son one time, and it's a really unique story. And so, and Bill and Mary, if they're going to do something, they're going to do it all the way, you know, kudos to them. And so they did some Googling back then, and they found, hey, you know, competent world-class designers, John Huck. And they did what everyone does when they build their first course. They got the world's best designer and they dropped them up. I mean, it was crazy. So, you know, Bill spearheaded that thing, and it's an absolute five-star. And, you know, I've talked with John several times about how significant that course was. So once we got the association together, and then we knew that we had Hillcrest at our disposal, it was kind of a logical step from there. So I'd been attending the Canadian National Championships in 2015 and 17. And I had asked Brian Honegger, the PDGA director for World, I think that's his title, but you know, he's centered in Canada. Yeah,
international director.
International, yeah. Exactly. So I asked Brian, look, if we were going to host a national championship, what are the steps? And so to Brian's credit, he gave me a template. You know, he told me, here's what you should be doing the next 2-3 years. And so probably around 2015, that really plan started to get into motion. And we checked some big things off our checklist, ran a B tier, started to go to some other international events and talk with some other TDs. And I got to tell you, I mean, there is a handful of TDs, you know, Dave Slater out on the West Coast in Canada, and Doug Bjerkes in Kansas, that were both really liberal with their time and helped to explain to me what you should be planning for, preparing to do when you have something like this. Because, you know, one of my big things is the game grows through amateurs, 100% it does. But giving those amateurs something to strive towards and having them see what this, the capacity of this game is. I mean, there is no substitute. I said it in the doc, but there's no substitute for seeing Paul throw a backhand or Nate throw a forehand. You know, like you see that once and you either want to quit disc golf and never try again for life, or you're like, damn, I'm going to do that someday, you know? So, and getting those pros up. And, you know, I do have to give a shout out to three very specific pros who went a long way to taking that leap of faith, because, Paige Pierce, Nate Sexton, and Simon Lizotte all said yes to the doc, but they also said yes to coming to Nationals for the first time when none of them knew me and none of them knew any of the experience that they were going to have. So they could have been, you know, heading out to the wilderness and playing disc golf in a field, but they said yes. And the joke was on them because it was so good. And I mean, as I think you can hear from their voices, even in the doc, they're in it for the long haul. They'll come back because I think we do have something really special.
Well, this is kind of that like merging of, you know, at least in PDGA staff and board of directors, as far as membership, we're always like, you know, we spend so much time focusing on the pros, but 80% are amateur players. This is kind of like the marriage of that, right? Like you have these pros coming up there and taking a leap of faith and helping you guys generate interest, and it's paying off in more amateur interest and involvement up there, right?
That's absolutely correct. And I mean, a big thing, I know we do, a lot of us sit around, even, you know, be it think tanks or just, you know, shooting the breeze with each other, but there is no silver bullet per se that's going to just grow the game of disc golf. And I think as the pandemic kind of hit too, we realized that as much as people had planned and these big companies had planned to make growth happen, like it was still a shock. Like I disc golf numbers in the Maritimes here, probably up 100% of growth over last year at this time. And although those numbers might be extreme, I think a lot of courses are experiencing a huge boom. I know sales across Canada are massive. And I know that's a reflection of what's going on in North America. So there's no like one absolute ideal thing that is going to grow the game, but it is all the things together. And again, I understand historical disc golf somewhat. I've been playing 20 years and lots of friends who've been playing longer, but this game has been driven by passion for so long, and I don't ever want to diminish that passion. But as that passion still persists forward, we also have to get a little more tight on that professional side, because the way, you know, running events, I personally would be a huge advocate for seeing, you know, some kind of touring card or Q school, some sort. I'd also be a huge advocate to see some standardized, I know we have an open book test and you have to qualify to be an official and all that stuff, but some standardized tests to start running our major tours. So, because there's so much history behind us and so many TDs and people have run excellent events, we should be learning from those people and maintaining, because, you know, you can have all the momentum in the world, but if someone builds a really, truly bad course or runs a really, truly bad event, like, that actually takes us back a notch. And I don't think anyone does those things intentional. And I don't think any of the disc golf companies out there are malicious. I think a lot of them have really great intent. But strengthening the side of our game that relies on professionalism is going to be our next leap, I think.
All right, so Brian, I want to kick this one back to you. You go back to Canadian Nationals last year with the intent of, you know, telling the story of this tournament and about Ben and his work up there. And I'm sure you probably had a filmmaker is going to go into something with a plan, right? And then big hurricane. You know, tell me about how much adaptation that took, and you know, what did that do to your initial plans, and how much did that really impact how the documentary looks?
You know, I kind of had a motto throughout a lot of this production, which was roll with the punches, because it seemed like things just kept going wrong. Just every corner I turned, it was something went wrong. So I learned a lot about how you have to approach a documentary. And you can go in with a plan, you can go in with what subjects you want to discuss, but really you're going to have to adapt, and you're going to have to, you know, take advantage of the opportunities that you're presented. And that really kind of gives it some life and some authenticity. So it's given me a new perspective on how you approach these kind of projects.
And what's, so you get everything in the can, mostly, I would imagine, and you come back and then... I'm sure you had plans to hit the road this season a little more, and then pandemic hits. Where were you at? Was this accelerated because of having the newfound time to work on it, or were you always kind of chipping away at it in the background anyway?
So I had gotten it to a point of a rough cut that was the general story by the time we left for Memorial. And I still wasn't sure if I wanted to go back again this year and try to shoot more scenes and add more to it, or if, you know, I needed to work with what I had. So I had gotten it to that point. And then when the pandemic hit, it just seemed like the prime opportunity and the prime story that people needed at the right now. So I went back and I continued to chip away at it and really kind of accelerated things over the last month. And yeah, got it together. Can't wait for people to see it.
As I say, I know you've released it on a handful of Patreon channels, Jomez, Central Coast, Paige Pierce's, Simon Lazotz, Frisbee Rob. Did I miss one?
And Nate Perkins.
Sorry. I had almost all of them, but what's the response been like so far? You know, what kind of feedback are you guys hearing about this?
The response has been very kind. That's really the most I can say about it. No, the response has been great. People seem to enjoy it. Had some feedback for some slight changes and fixes I can make before the final version. So it was kind of nice to have a soft release and get some opinions before we really put it out there for everyone. And I'm really happy about the form that it's taking for this wide release on July 1st.
Well, I mean, for someone who's watched it so far, what might be changing? Is it like actual scenes? Is it tone? What are you making tweaks to?
It's honestly probably nitpicky things that only I notice, but there are a couple things here and there, a couple lines that people had a hard time hearing. So I need to either boost the volume or add some subtitles. But for the most part, the form is going to be the same. And it's just kind of a final round of polishing that I really want to put on it.
Cool. So Ben, I mean, what's it like for you? You don't strike me as the type who is coming out there, we've talked about it already, of doing this all for publicity. So what's it like for you when this trailer comes out and it's got all these top pros are like, you just got to meet this guy, Ben. Like, you know, what's this experience been like for you? It's kind of, you've probably got like a little bit of a legend going now, I would imagine.
Only in my own mind, I think, you know, so no. it's partially mortifying and it's, you know, mostly humbling. And, I mean, you know, it makes me teary even just to like think about it right now, but, I've always been really humbled and I've been driven by the belief that, if you're a real genuine human being and you're doing things because you're passionate about that, that things work themselves out. And, I mean, Paige and I were actually just having a conversation a couple weeks ago about just taking a leap of faith, you know, and the fact that, I mean, it is really wacky because for years, like I'd drive down or fly down to the States where some of these people were playing and be like, hey, so, you know, there's this part of the world, like north and east of Maine, and I'd like do whatever I could do to get you up here, you know? And I mean, honestly, to tell you the truth, I kind of omitted a major part. One of the people that is the most responsible for this entire thing happening is Bree Sexton, because we were at a McBeast challenge one time in Maine years ago. And my you know, best disc golf friend Duncan and I, he and I were standing, and we happened to be standing next to Nate's wife, and we started talking, and we realized that both she and Nate were just regular human beings, you know, which was great. And she kind of said, look, you know, there is a template if you really want to have Nate come up. So to the fact now that like I'm just friends with some of these humans who are like excel and represent the game so well. It's humbling. It's lovely, but really in turn, I am happy about it for about 5 seconds. And then I just think to myself, all right, let's work harder now. So I'll make no bones about it. My absolute goal is to host the World Championship. We have a plan in place to try to get that in the next like 3 years. I know COVID will push things back, and we really want to see it outside of America. No offense to America, but yay for the rest of the world. We feel like we have
it's
a
all
great,
good, man.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you. You know, I mean, coming to Canada, it's free medicine. We have a great spot for it. We're there for the long haul. We can, you know, handle tourism, we can handle the course play, and everything is kind of in line with that. So when I hear it is great reaffirmation. It's really lovely to know that like the effort and the work that you've put in has been recognized. I mean, there are times where I think, damn, like someone made a documentary about me and I'm just like a dude who likes throwing frisbees, you know? So, but really ultimately it just makes me want to put on an even better event in 2020 and then an even better event in 2021 and, you know, take it from there. So every time I just opened a brand new course up this weekend, and it was like one of those wonderful openings where I had 80 people come who'd never played. And the average age was about 56 years old. And I just think like this is it. Like that's the reason why I started. And I know that that course will change people's lives, you know? So will the documentary change anyone's lives? Maybe not, but it will certainly be a reflection of where we are in the world. I mean, it changed Brian and my life. So, you know, that's significant for me.
Sure. There you go.
Yeah. So that's two, right? Yeah. Those two count. But yeah, these things just like it's an energy shot in the arm, and it just makes me think like, all right, what's next? Because I got some more tricks up my sleeve, I think.
Well, talking about 2020 Canadian Nationals, it takes place in September, so there is still some lead time. But what's the current status? I mean, I'm looking at the registration list. There's quite a few American players. As far as I know, the border is still closed between the US and Canada. So what's kind of your guys's thought process planning for Canadian Nationals this year?
Yeah, we've had several meetings up to now. We're in a really great benefit where we are in September. The border is not actually closed, but it's kind of closed. You can fly into a country. Okay. You can fly into America. You can fly into Canada. There is currently a 2-week quarantine. So, the one thing that I'll say is I mean, it's what month now? June? I don't know. It's set, like, time is both accelerating and
dragging. We got a few months.
It's accelerating and dragging on at the exact same time. And things have changed so much that we've actually just tried to actively stay kind of quiet. We're engaged with the both provincial government and the federal government to some level to obviously adhere to all the COVID rules. Now we're on the docket as a Silver Series. So we've talked with the DGPT about, you know, the process in place for that. We're kind of crossing our fingers. As you mentioned, registration's actually gone up since the pandemic. You know, more people are signed on. I know in Canada, the feeling is people are like ready to explode in the best possible way. They're like, look, I'll be a good boy or a good girl until September. You just let me get on that plane so we can go and spend a week together with other disc golf family, you know? So right now we're 100% convinced that we're running a tournament. I am less convinced as to who is going to be able to come. You know, we're not expecting a European contingent. So we feel pretty strongly that people from across Canada are going to be able to come. But in terms of the border, we're waiting and seeing. And then July 1st, we have another announcement federally that's going to come up. And then we expect probably another one to follow 3 to 4 weeks from there. So I don't know. I mean, the other thing is, America, y'all are not doing yourselves any favors here right now. Get this thing under control. Wrap this pandemic up. We haven't had any cases on PEI in the last month. There's been zero cases in my county.
Wow.
The two provinces, the Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, have been very, very low in the last while. So we kind of also have a feeling of like, all right, we're in a good position. You know, everyone wants the economy to you know, they want people employed, right? And that's a good thing. So we're just trying to do our due diligence, keep our ducks in order, and you know, cross our fingers and hope that hurricane doesn't hit us twice in a row, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. All right, I just have one more question for each of you guys. Brian, what's, you know, and I kind of posed this question to you offline, so hopefully you're somewhat prepared. But, you know, you've put in all this work, you've done this documentary, you have this, you know, creative body of work now. I guess this is a two-parter. What's next for the documentary in terms of, you know, trying to push it out further? And then, you know, what other stories are you hoping to be able to maybe tell from behind the lens?
The documentary, I guess, yeah, it comes out July 1st on Central Coast in Jomez. And so we're just looking to get that out to as many people as possible. We've had some grander plans to potentially try to look at outdoor film festivals or what things along those lines. But, you know, that's still tentative. The moment we're really focusing on getting the wide release ready. As for future projects, you know, I think my next personal project, I might step away from disc golf and do something a little different just to mix things up. But all the while, I'm still kicking around ideas, researching ideas. And I have a few things in the works, but nothing concrete enough to really say that this is a project in disc golf yet.
And then, Ben, you've had a lot of success getting the sport to where it is up in the Maritimes. You know, what would be some advice you could give someone who is looking to try and follow in your footsteps and grow disc golf to a larger point in an area that maybe feels more remote or doesn't have as much interest?
Have a really supportive wife. That would be the first thing, you know, but honestly, amass a team. I talked to some builders from Sweden, must have been 5 or 6 years ago, and they explained to me when they open a course in Europe, a lot of times it's really community oriented. So you've got the media involved, you've got your local schools involved, you've got, you know, as many partners as you possibly can get involved. And when you incorporate a wider swath other than just, you know, your audience of friends, that's when you really start to become successful. These courses are, I mean, look, we're playing disc golf 12 months a year, even in a climate that is not that great in January and February. And there's not a lot of industries, sport industries, leisure time things that can boast that. And so it's a leverage thing that we have. It's a two-way street. And I would say engage as many good partners as you possibly can. Build yourself a team of people that you love and want to work towards the same goal. And then, put the product out there and let it do its thing, you know, and kind of speaking back towards Brian and doing other projects, you know, for the cinematography aspect alone of this film and how beautiful he's really framed PEI.
It's gorgeous.
It's so gorgeous. And I know that he'd be absolutely crushingly successful on any venture that he chooses to do. So he's part of that team.
Very cool. Well, yeah. Guys, thank you again for taking the time. You know, the documentary is beautiful. You guys have done a great job up there. And for those of you who maybe haven't seen it yet, if you do want to watch it now, you can go to, and I'll let you guys correct me on this if we need to, the Patreon pages for either Jomez Pro, Central Coast Disc Golf, Paige Pierce, Simon Zott, Nate Perkins, and Frisbee Rob, right?
You nailed it. Yes,
that's correct.
Or if you really want to wait, you can celebrate Canada Day, July 1st. It'll be coming out on Central Coast and Jomez's YouTube channel. Again, it's called Throw Canada. And that was Ben Smith and Brian Geis. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Steve.
Of course. All right. We'll talk to you guys soon. We'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio.
And we are back with the hot rounds of the week. We got some very hot rounds on the women's side. I'm pretty excited. And they're not all from the United States this time.
Pretty excited.
Which means I have another name that I'm going to completely...
This is an easy one. You can do it.
Mess up. Okay. All right. The fifth hottest rated round was Vilma Kivimaki.
That sounds good to me.
Okay. She played in the NBDG Ladies Series Monsala powered by Prodigy that was in Finland, and she shot a 947 rated first round to take first place. Congrats on that. The fourth hottest rated round was Alex Benson. She played in the DGVT Tour number 2, the Bro, and that was in Jeffersonville, Vermont. She shot a
I think that was at Smugs.
Yeah, that would make sense. She shot a 951 her second round to take first place. Christine Jennings played in the 2020 Ohio Games practice Flex Start event in Beaver Creek, Ohio. She shot a super hot 953. Her one and only round, took first place in that. And then Rebecca Cox played in the Idle Hour Open 2020, sponsored by Innova. That was in Altamont, Kansas. She shot a 964 her first round and took first place. And there was a pretty good field at that event too, 5 or 6 other women. So congrats to Rebecca. And this one I almost did not see, because as we've talked about before, and we interviewed her last year, I believe, Kelsey Brakel, she just like throws amazingly and just plays. She's been playing in the men's amateur divisions for years, and she took first place, not surprised, in the advanced men's division at the 2020 Ohio Games practice flex start, and she shot a 982.
Nice.
To take first place.
Yeah, Kelsey slays it, dude.
Oh my gosh, yes. And there's one more. So before I saw Kelsey, which I'm very happy I did, because I'm pretty sure they're listeners of the show, my good friend Sarah Cunningham would have been the fifth hottest rated round. And I just wanted to give her a shout out. She had a really good round. She played, I don't remember where she played, but I was very happy to see her name on the list, and she got bumped by Kelsey. So I'm sorry, Sarah. Congrats.
It's all right. We can have 6 place. It's all good. All right. Over on the MPO side, we got some names that you've heard of, I think, at, 5 different events, which is good, man. Can we just say for a minute, there are like, I think we're back to over 800 sanctioned events right now.
Dang.
So if you're a PDGA member and you have been out playing, I just want to say on behalf of our staff, thank you. We've been working really hard, and it's just warmed our hearts to see everyone getting back out there and hitting the course. So thank you very much. GT Hancock is our fifth hottest rated round with a 1055 rated opener at the Dynamic Disc Flex Start Friday at Jimmy Porter. I'm guessing because it's a flex start, that was just one round and he won that one. That was in Carrollton, Texas. My money is going to say that Steve-O's story had something to do with that tournament. The second hottest rated round, or no, I guess this would be the fourth, second on the list, fourth hottest rated round. Andrew Marweed, he of the Cookie Mini. It was his second round at the 2020 Ohio Games, and he took first place there after his 1060 rating performance. So very nice, Andrew. At the Idle Hour 2020, sponsored by Innova, again, out in Kansas. This was Emerson Keith. He shot a 1061 rated opener to win that event. All these people were the winners of the tournaments this week, which is cool. Dallin Blanchard was our second hottest rated round with a 1064 rated second round at the 2020 Lucky Disc Golf Open in Idaho Falls, Idaho. And our hottest rated round, Mr. Andrew Presnell with a 1068 rated first round at the Missouri Eagle and Elephant and Castle present the 10th annual Jared Hilton Memorial in Lebanon, Missouri. That was a name. Missouri Eagle and Elephant and Castle. I don't know what that relates to. I don't know if that's a... I have no idea, but I like it. Anyway, Andrew Presnell, great job. So, as they are every week, our hot rounds were brought to you by Birdie Fuel Coffee. If you go over to birdiefuelcoffee.com and use the code PDJRadio, you will get 10% off at checkout. Sarah, I know you were over there earlier and you saw quite the new tongue twister they got on their website.
Yes. So two of the best guys, I think, in disc golf, they are both sponsored by Birdie Fuel, and they've got a Best Buddies Birdie Fuel coffee bundle, and that would be Chris Clemens and Jordan Castro. So head on over. It's the Clemenade medium roast blend and the 12-ounce Let's Go dark roast blend for $24.
Yeah, it's the Best Buddies bundle.
Best Buddies bundle. There you go.
I love it. Good stuff. I also see that Gatekeeper Media has got a blend now, which is great. Those guys have been doing a lot of really good work through all the pandemic. They just put out some videos with Simon Lazat going through like a solo round, but good two-camera action with Simon Lazat at Maple Hill. So go check that out over at Gatekeeper and Simon's channel. And go buy some Birdie Fuel coffee at birdiefuelcoffee.com. Sarah, this weekend... and we're like one proper week away from the start of the Disc Golf Pro Tour. And this weekend we have a Disc Golf Pro Tour Silver Series just a few short disc throws away from my house here in Oceanside, California at the Challenge at Goat Hill Park presented by Innova. It is run by my good friend Alan Risley and his son AJ. Speaking of AJ, and I'm just plugging all the videos, did you see the AJ versus AJ versus AJ versus AJ video?
I did not.
So Central Coast, I think Alan may have actually done the editing on this. So they've had several tournaments at Goat Hill where AJ has been filmed. And so they took like four performances worth of AJ at Goat Hill and put them into one, like him versus the other. So like it was, you know, 2017 AJ teeing off, 2018, you know, so on and so forth. And it was an all AJ four-person card. It was cool. I think AJ won. So that was over on Central Coast. So go check that one out. This tournament, I'm gonna go check it out. It's gonna be interesting to see. I know I saw AJ and Alan put a video on social where they're even gonna be like spraying down the chains with bleach solution. I can't remember if they're having people do masks. I know in San Diego County, we have some regulations for golf courses. Like you have to get your temperature taken. I can't remember if masks are part of that. I will bring mine, obviously. So it'll just be, I'm just really interested to see, you know, I feel pretty safe right now going and doing things outdoors, especially at freaking Goat Hill Park, because people, if you've never seen this place, it's massive. It's a 10,000 plus foot course. Most of it is pretty open. It's a golf course, but it's beautiful. It's got rolling hills, a lot of wind. It's going to be a tricky tournament, I think, this week, especially our weather around here has been kind of, we're getting that like little, you know, June breeze. And I think wind will be a factor this weekend. So, Sarah, I know we have not done picks in a while. We are going to do picks for this. I will also say that we don't have listener picks because we didn't plan this. So we are planning now. We are going to start listener picks up again for next week's Disc Golf Pro Tour Dynamic Discs Open. So please, if you are a listener and you want to log your winner and top five for both the MPO and FPO fields at the Dynamic Discs Open, please email us radio@pdga.com. You got to rep the listeners. Because I think the listeners are behind in the picks, right?
No, I'm actually behind in the picks. The so listeners
goes,
are beating me.
It goes me, then listeners, then you.
That's correct.
So you got to rep the listeners to keep making Sarah look bad.
But that's I have won the last 2 years. Let's just remind ourselves of that.
Probably on technicalities. Anyway, we've got this tournament, the Challenge at Goat Hill. It will be filmed by Central Coast Disc Golf. You can also follow live scoring over at UDisc Live. So it's like a good ramp up to proper tour season. So let's talk about it, Sarah. Let's start on the MPO side. I want to know, I believe you get the first pick. We are just going to pick winners and not top fives for this one because the field is not quite as deep. There's only 56 players. But we're just going to go winners. So, Sarah, give me your winner on the MPO side. Defending champion, Thomas Gilbert, by the way.
Yes.
Just had to throw that one out there.
Are you telling me that's who I should pick, or are you just...
I'm reminding the listeners that this was a big tournament for Thomas Gilbert last year. This was his first big A-tier win.
Yeah. Man, this is Might be his only A-tier. I have no idea what these people are doing. Like, I've seen some people
in
contests, like Sias and Thomas. Other than that, I'm just like, I guess I'm just going to go with Thomas because he played really well last year. Why not?
All right. I like it. I take that. I do want to correct myself. This was not Thomas's first career A-tier win. He's actually got a couple more. He had one in the advanced division and he did win an open A-tier, the River City Open in 2018. So my bad, Thomas. Sarah took you for a pick. Man, it is really tough to pick a winner at this one. Knowing what I know about this course, you want some distance, but you also need to be able to manage, the wind. Like the wind here is, very difficult to be reckoned with.
Also, there's some ground play. I mean, I haven't been out there, but just because of all those rolling hills, some of the baskets are sitting on some pretty precarious locations.
Oh yeah.
Being able to land like in the circle without rolling down into OB, that kind of stuff is really important too, it seemed like.
And I do think they were making some changes, tightening up things, making a little more OB to try and challenge it. So it's tough. I'm going to just go from a peer rating standpoint and I'm going to take Philo Brathwaite. He's the top rated player in the tournament by 7 points. He's played this tournament plenty of times. You know, distance isn't as much his thing, but here I think he can get away with it because he doesn't have to just go bomb out. He can when he wants to. He'll tell you it's old man strength.
Old man strength. Nice.
Course management here is going to be important. Obviously I want distance, but looking at this field, I like the experience factor, the higher ratings factor. But you know, it could be anyone's ball game. I was really surprised, Sarah, to see that AJ Risley's rating dropped to 10.03. He's been injured for quite some time, but I was super bummed that it dropped that far. I know he worked his tail off to get as high as he was. I think he was up to like 10.17 or 10.20. I'm going to double check because I have these stats right in front of me. He was at 10.19. So, you know, hopefully this is the road back to higher ratings for him. Cause he's just, you know, he's one of my favorite people out on tour and I want to see him succeed. So, that is the MPO side. Sarah, FPO is a very shallow field, 6 players. And so who are you going to pick?
Well, it's one more than last year. And looking at what happened last year, Jennifer Allen took this down by 39 strokes, shooting a 2 under par. And her first round was over 1,000. I also know that she has been, she was actually supposed to come out a couple weeks ago to play the Tennessee States, but she has played some events, you know, in the past couple weeks. It seems like she's been throwing a lot, putting a lot. So I feel good about taking her.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I got no problems with that. I'm going to take Owen Scoggins and hope that she can hang with Jennifer Allen. I know it probably won't be on the distance front, but maybe she can make up for it with the putting. So those are my picks. And again, for the Challenge at Goat Hill, you can follow the action on Central Coast Disc Golf and UDisc Live. The really interesting part about this to me is that, so we've got the Dynamic Disc Open starting on, is it going to be Thursday? Is the 26th? No, okay, it's Friday. So like both AJ and Jennifer Allen and Philo and a couple other people are going to be hauling from Oceanside out to Emporia this week. So that's going to be a long haul from Monday to, they, I would imagine they get there by Wednesday if they hustle, but yeah, it'll be good. I'm just stoked that we have some disc golf comeback. Cause I'll tell you what, Sarah, we have spent a lot of time talking about not disc golf on the show the last couple months. I appreciate that listeners have stuck with us. I know it hasn't always been pretty.
Have they? Do we know that for a fact?
I sometimes look at the stats. Sometimes I don't want to. It's more just a general, Sarah, for people who are listening.
I know.
They have actually stuck with us. So
I will. Can I make a shout out on that note?
Yeah.
I know for a fact that one person has stuck with us, and that's Sarah Nicholson. She is our number one fan. So shout out to you.
Sarah Nicholson, shout out to Sarah. And that's a good segue into your last shout out before we go today.
Yeah. So Throw Pink. So this is Pride Month. June is Pride Month. And Throw Pink recently collaborated with Savage Apparel, who makes super cool ultimate and disc golf jerseys. There's a number of disc golfers that are sponsored by them, including my girl, Ellen Widboom, and a number of other people. But they just collaborated to make a super awesome Pride Month rainbow jersey. And they've got it in men's and women's sizes, from like extra small to 3X, like everything that you could possibly want. And I just ordered one a couple days ago. I'm super excited about it. So head on over to, I think it's, yeah, just
it's Google SavageUltimate.com.
Yeah. Okay. And it's actually on their homepage, so you can't miss it.
Yeah, it looks good. They've even got like, they sponsor Jomez as well, or are their partners with Jomez. Yep. They do a lot in disc golf. Yeah, these they have quite a handful of Pride jerseys. Like they have an AUDL one. So, I mean, they've got a lot of different stuff. It's cool. I love seeing a company like Savage step up and really support some of these causes. So if you are a person who wants to also support those causes, head on over to SavageUltimate.com. And Sarah, I hope to see what yours looks like. Maybe when you're out on the course at the Music City Open in September.
Yeah. Okay. I'll definitely support it.
All right. Well, hey, I think that is our show for the week, Sarah. I hope. Oh, gosh. No, big thing. One more big thing. Well, two more big things. Number one.
Oh, gosh.
Happy birthday this weekend to Sean, you said, right?
Yes. Sean is turning the big 5-0 on Sunday. So if you.
Old man Sean.
Yes. This is actually kind of funny. He hasn't been on Facebook for maybe 2 years now. And so I get like people tag me in posts
to like get his attention.
Yeah. So I'm basically his publicist, but a really cool, this is like a total, I'm totally stealing your thunder, but I thought this was really cool. So Will McCaskill, who's the president of the National Disc Golf Club, he posted something about me coming out of retirement. Blah, blah, blah. And somebody, one of his friends saw it. And I guess I'm just assuming here, I guess connected the dots like, oh, Sinclair. And she plays disc golf. I wonder if she has any relation to Sean Sinclair. And turns out this guy played with Sean at some course in Iowa 20 years ago. And this particular round stuck with him and made him want to continue in disc golf. And now he lives like 2 hours away from Nashville and he's got his own private course. And you know, just Sean, I read the whole story to Sean and he was tearing up, which the man never does. Never seen the man cry in my life.
Right.
But he was tearing up because it really touched him just that someone remembered him 20 years later and, you know, impacted his disc golf career basically. So that's super cool.
That's cool.
But yeah, happy 50th, almost 50th birthday to my main man.
Crazy. how's the home course coming?
It's good. We have 6 baskets, 3 of which are Throw Pink, another shout out. Nice. And we've got 12 tees that are kind of rotating around those baskets. Of course, it's Sean Sinclair design. So one of the holes is nearly 1,000 feet.
A mile.
And there's a few 500 to 600 foot throws as well. It's cool.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay. So my other shout out I was trying to give at the end of the show, it's Father's Day this weekend, man. So happy Father's Day to all of the dads out there listening. Happy Father's Day to my dad. He's pretty much the reason that I got into disc golf. And so, you know, I would be stoked if I were actually playing with him this weekend. That's not the case, but, I hope that anyone out there listening can maybe go get a round in, of either disc golf or your favorite beverage with your dad this weekend. So,
and happy Father's Day to you as well.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it'll be good. I'm excited to hang with my girls here at home. So, Sarah, have a great weekend. Have fun with Sean and tell him we say hi. And for everybody else, this was PDJ Radio. Leave us a review, share it with your friends, hit us up, radio@pdj.com. So, for Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. Be good to each other. We'll see you next week.